Thanks, everyone. So good afternoon and welcome to this afternoon's session on helping operations top-heavy teams the smart way, or as we like to call it, lessons we learnt the hard way. Today, we're going to be talking about a few interesting concepts, and we appreciate that you might want to take photos of our slides. However, rest assured that we'll be posting them on our respective slide shares as soon as we get off stage, and of course they'll be available on the Usenix Lisa site later in the week. All right, so I'm Michael Keogh. I'm a staff site reliability engineer at LinkedIn on the production SRE team. Yes, I have somewhat of a funny accent. I am Australian, but I do sound less Australian than Brendan. He's somehow kept his accent even though he's lived in the US longer than I have. And so before I joined LinkedIn, I was doing some network engineering at the University of Queensland in Australia, where I was studying.
Hi, I'm Todd. I'm a senior staff engineer at LinkedIn. I was on the Kafka team up until this summer, and I actually co-authored Kafka, the Definitive Guide, with O'Reilly. If you don't know what Kafka is, I'll mention it in about 5 minutes, because it was the bane of my existence for 4.5 years. Right now, I'm with the capacity engineering team, so our job is to do capacity planning for the whole site. Been there for a few months. That was born out of a not-quite-made-this-talk situation last fall where we ran into some capacity issues, and now we're trying to figure out how to handle it better in the future. So I did write a blog post a little while back this year on Code Yellow, which is what we're going to be talking about today. Just really briefly, this is our state that a team can declare when they're in a really bad spot, usually due to what Kurt mentioned earlier, high toil, or what Dave mentioned, smells in your engineering, or other problems in your environment. So we're going to talk about that in a good bit of detail. But the post is a good refresher afterwards on some of the things that we're going to talk about. Again, pull the slides. There are great slide notes in there, too. So I'm going to talk about Code Yellow, and Michael's going to fill in a lot of the details. But we're not going to talk about how to get rid of all your technical debt. I know where most of my skeletons are. I don't know where any of yours are. I can't tell you how to fix them. Michael isn't going to be able to tell you either because we don't work in your organization. We're also not going to talk about what changes might be needed in your organization's culture to implement some of the stuff we're going to talk about today. We've both talked about this previously. We're happy to talk about it offline in much more detail. I'm sure we'll be talking about it at a conference near you in the future. But I will say that one thing that's necessary here is a blameless culture, because we are going to talk about how to identify anti-patterns in your teams. And to do that, you have to be able to talk about your teams in a way that does not point the blame at individuals. As our SVP of engineering, David Henke, would say, we're here to attack the problem, not the person. You also need to have open and honest communication. So this is another cultural touchstone that has to be present. Because in working through high toil, especially in the context of what we're going to talk about, the Code Yellow, you have to be able to communicate with everyone else in the org, and they need to understand where you are, why you got there, how you're fixing it. If they understand it, if they hear it from you, they will work with you. If they don't hear it, they're going to think you're dragging your feet and you're just delaying the feature they asked for because you don't like them. So we'll talk about the end goal, which is getting rid of the problems in your org, getting rid of the bad smells, as Dave would say. This is what you have to do to get out of your Code Yellow. You have to not only resolve the problem that got you into this situation, you have to make sure it never comes back again. So to get into what the Code Yellow is, Michael's going to give you a little background on it, and then we're each going to describe a situation that we were in. Michael's going to talk about traffic SRE, and I'm going to talk about Kafka. Then we'll look at what the Code Yellow formula is, what the pieces that go into this framework are. And these are things that you'll be able to take away and execute. This is not something specific to LinkedIn. After that, we'll talk about the key learnings, and then hopefully we'll wrap up with some time for Q&A.
Thanks, Todd. So as I said in the intro, this talk is a collection of lessons that we've learned over time. So as Todd said, all engineering teams run into trouble time to time, alert fatigue caused by technical debt or a failure to plan for growth. This can very quickly burn out SREs, overloading both development and operations teams with reactive work, where they don't actually sort of fix the problems that they're getting into. If you have, you know, communication problems between teams, you know, you can really find yourself in a problem, in a troublesome place where you can't easily see a path out. So at times like this, it is our natural instinct as reliability engineers to sort of double down and fight through this. And often enough, you know, that doesn't really work. We need to actually step back, assess the situation, and then ask for help to put the team back on track, on the road for success. So we're going to look at the process for the code yellow and the term we use for this process of righting the ship, and discuss how to identify teams that are struggling. And we'll look through these two separate experiences of both traffic and Kafka code yellows. We'll examine the root causes, what steps were taken, and how the engineering organization as a whole supported that process. So between Todd and myself, we've provided or performed a number of assistance rendered duties for a number of teams over the past 18 months. So as you see on the screen, these were for all different teams, all with a slightly different underlying problem. So traffic SRE, which I'll talk about, Voyager SRE, the capacity issue that Todd was alluding to earlier, Espresso SRE, and then Kafka SRE, which is Todd, which is what Todd will talk about. So let's get to it and talk about traffic SRE. So if you can remember back to last year's SREcon US, I was getting ready to make a talk, or two talks, I think, there. And the day before the conference started, my boss tapped me on the shoulder. And I thought, what have I done now? And she said, we need to talk. I'm like, oh, no. And went into a room and said, look, hey, we've got an issue with a team, with the traffic team. We really need your help. And so in the hours leading up to SREcon and during the conference, got a little bit more information on the scenario, what had happened and what needed to be done. And so we got this set of information. And the first main pillar that we saw of trouble was technical debt. So written documentation needed improvement. There was a poor deployment process, which required a lot of attention and often failed. And we were trying to expand our global footprint. And so this was really important to resolve. There was also a large amount of alert fatigue due to some poorly defined alerts, some infrastructure that hadn't got the love that it needed over time. And it was all sort of getting out of hand. Also, after a period of time, there began to be resource allocation problems. So there was a large backlog of work for clients that needed to be done. We actually found some tickets during this process which were over a year old that hadn't been looked at. On top of that, and what was sort of the breaking point for this team, was we had a number of team members leave in a short period of time to move on to another company and do ops there. So we're really in a pickle. And so what we actually did is, in March last year, we took five SREs, staff SREs from other teams, and dedicated this them to this traffic team for a period of 3 months for this code yellow. We stopped all non-critical client work for a number of weeks. We completely recreated all of the monitoring processes, alerting, remediation. We spent a huge amount of time removing complexity in the system. So as the talk just before said, we had a very non-boring system. There was a lot of complexity, a lot of dependencies, a lot of moving parts, a lot of tribal knowledge. And we spent a huge amount of time in this process removing the complexity, making it as simple as we possibly could. And we really focused on making the infrastructure reliable. And of course, we needed to backfill all the people who had left the team, so we also had to spend a lot of time making this very simple to operate as well as well-documented.
All right, so in the case of Kafka, we actually spent the entire first half of this year in a code yellow. And the development team was involved as well. Kafka is a publish-subscribe messaging system, as some of you probably know. It was actually written at LinkedIn way back in like 2010 before it was contributed to Apache. And now it's, you know, one of the largest data pipeline systems out there. Everyone's using it. that scares me a lot based on what I know about it. So in our case, you know, at LinkedIn, just like everyone else, we use it for almost everything, and we hit a bunch of problems, but it was pretty much all centered around a capacity issue. You may recognize a graph like this. You may have a graph like this in your own repertoire. I've used this graph several times recently because it describes very well the problem that we found ourselves in. In 2010, we started using Kafka, and it took us 5.5 years to get to 1 trillion messages a day. It then took us 2 years to get from 1 trillion to 2 trillion. It then took us, about 6 months? Four months to get to 3 trillion. And that was the end of 2017. And by March of 2017, we were at 5 trillion messages a day. So at the end of 2017, we could see the headlights of this oncoming truck, but we couldn't do anything about it. The problem was is that we had a multi-tenant infrastructure for Kafka. We're running it as a service for the rest of the organization. And we had no controls over who could create resources and when. We had actually no information about who created those resources. So if we had a particular Kafka topic that went out of control, we would have to go in and try to determine from the name whose topic that was, or maybe consume the data, hopefully decode it, and figure out who sent it into the system from there. So we had no source of truth for this information. The capacity planning that we were doing was mostly centered around organic growth. We didn't get a lot of information from the people who were using Kafka about changes in their call patterns that were coming downstream. So if we had a major initiative coming, we didn't have much information about it. And often the information that we got was bad. For example, when we started doing some integrations with a very large company that acquired us a couple of years ago, the estimates for the data usage on Kafka ranged anywhere from, oh, it's going to be about 2 times the current usage to it's going to be about 10 times the current usage. And at the numbers we're at, that's kind of a problem. So at the end of the year, we got this 100% increase in traffic. We had no way to mitigate it either. We could barely track it down. And, we knew it wasn't a temporary spike. We knew it wasn't a new pattern. We really had no idea what was going on. In addition to this, we had a serious problem with alerts. So Dave mentioned 90 alerts in 6 hours previously. I was on call for 12-hour shifts, 7 days a week. Then we hand off to Bangalore for the other 12. I got a paging alert every 3.5 minutes for every 12-hour shift at the peak of this. Most of those were useless. They were either situations we knew about, they were capacity problems, there were very few alerts in there. I actually gave a talk about this a couple weeks ago up in Boston about how bad this situation got and how much time we were spending fighting fires on this. So that was our big problem. We had no time to fix this. We had no time for proactive work. How'd we get out of it? Contrary to many situations, the security team was our friend. We had a major security initiative planned within the company to add information about who owned resources and put controls on resource creation. So we were able to, as part of the code yellow, to say we weren't going to do anything except this security work first. And that gave us the information we needed to start tracking down the problems. It also meant that we were now kind of funneling people to us when they needed to create resources. We were starting to force the conversations that needed to happen. We had the dev team go in and fix a couple pieces of infrastructure that couldn't be scaled properly, and we scaled a bunch of the rest with some emergency hardware uplifts. Sorry, Dave, we're on hard infrastructure. No Amazon, no C4s here to uplift. And at the end of it, we also had the SREs working on the non-actionable alerts, and we were able to reduce our alert load by 90% and get ourselves out of that situation. So how did we do this? How did Traffic SRE handle it? How did Kafka handle it? We used a process called Code Yellow. So this is, as I said, a way for a team that's struggling to throw their hands up, throw the yellow flag down on the field, and say, hold on, we can't do anything else. We have to fix the problems ahead of us. And the rest of the org supports this, and they support it because there's a clear framework in place for us. There are 5 components that you really need to know about. You have to have a clear problem statement. You have to define what success looks like. What's the criteria for getting out of the code yellow? You need to get some more resources to fix it in most situations. At the very least, you probably need someone to help organize things. You need to do a lot of planning, and then you need to do a lot of communication and partner with everyone else so that they know what's going on. So I'm going to dive into each of these in turn. So first off, much like anything else, you need to admit that you have a problem. You have to look at your org and say, what is the issue that we want to deal with? In Kafka's case, it was capacity and non-actionable alerts. Those were the big things that we needed to deal with. And then you need to measure the problem. If you can't measure it, you can't do anything about it. So if you're going to deal with alerts, then you need to count. How many alerts do you have? You need to collect information, as Kurt was talking about. Were they actionable? Were they non-actionable alerts? If they weren't actionable, why? So all this data is going to drive how you do the work at the end of the day, and this will determine what needs to be fixed. Because then you have to define how you're going to get out of this situation. What does success look like at the end of the day? These have to be concrete goals. The SMART framework is really helpful here. Specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound. You need a target date for when you're going to leave. And you can adjust it. Kafka took 2 months more to get out of this situation than we actually planned. So if you're doing alert fatigue, you might say that one of your goals is a certain percentage reduction in the number of alerts, or maybe the number of non-actionable alerts, to be a little more specific. You might take on a project to automate certain types of responses, and that could be another piece of your exit criteria. And you're going to keep the code yellow open until you get out of these. So you want to make sure they're relevant to the problem you're solving and that they do have an end in sight, that they are not ongoing things that you're going to do constantly. Then you're probably going to want some help with this. You know, as Michael described, they had 5 staff SREs brought into the traffic team to solve this problem. In almost every situation, you want a project manager. I know some of you may not really like your project managers. You think that all they do is add overhead with their tickets and their meetings and their Gantt charts. But guess what? They save your lives when you're doing something like this because they can help you with all the communication that you have to do with everyone else. And they can track the target date, and they can keep track of your priorities, and they can communicate with the other teams and say, yeah, I'm sorry, we can't get to that for you. We have to do this first. We're going to get to it really soon. I'll keep you in the loop. Planning. Did I mention project managers? This is critical. You have to prioritize your work. You have to prioritize short-term things that are going to solve your problems first. And you have to take your long-term projects that you were working on and put them on hold in most cases because you're going to address the short-term things first to get things fixed. Anything that reduces toil is your top priority. Anything that addresses a root cause of your code yellow is a top priority. Everything else is secondary. And as I said, the biggest part of this is communication. When you tell the other teams what's going on, when you tell them why you're delaying, what you're fixing, and how things are going to be better when you get out, they will happily assist you. They will ask, in a lot of cases, how can I help you to do this? And in a lot of cases, you're going to need help from other teams. You're going to have to go to another team and say, I need you to do X so that I can get out of this code yellow. And because it's a code yellow, because this has been accepted by the entire org, they will help prioritize that work for you. This is especially helpful with infrastructure teams that run tooling in your organization or monitoring and alerting if you need some feature added. These are the things that you're going to have at the end of the day. Everyone wants to succeed. The rest of the people in the company want to help you. If you talk to them, they will help you.
All right, so now that we've walked through the process, let's summarize some of the key aspects of running a code yellow. So first and foremost, measure. In the words of LinkedIn's former SVP of engineering, David Henke, what gets measured gets fixed. So it's extremely important to understand the toil or overhead that the team has, as Kurt was talking about earlier, and measure the performance, availability, reliability of the system you're operating. If you can quantify how something is running, whether it be a service or a team, you can determine what needs fixing. Secondly, prioritization. So in a code yellow, nothing gets fixed by just working harder. Something actually needs to change. So in most code yellow instances we're involved in, extra resources were brought in to help the team. And we also did reprioritization of other toil or other projects. So we could prioritize the work, as Todd said, that would help us get out of the situation that got us into this situation. As Todd said, the tasks in the code yellow should primarily prioritize efforts that remove overhead and toil. And ideally, this should be able to happen in about one quarter. As Todd said, his Code Yellow went a little bit longer, but generally, for this framework, we're trying to operate within a quarter time frame. And then finally, communicate. So there is a almost definite chance that you're probably going to need to delay, reprioritize, drop some commitment that you previously agreed upon. And it's important to your for your team to communicate out why you've ended a Code Yellow and what work will be done to make your team a better partner in the future and what problems will it fix. It's important to keep everyone up to date with weekly emails, so leverage those project managers, and you know, highlight the progress that you're making on fixing the problems that you've got, and make people aware of any potential blocking issues that also may delay the completion of the Code Yellow. All right, so with that, I think we've got a couple of minutes for questions. Thank you very much. So the question is, what actions have we taken to prevent Code Yellows in the future? So one effort we've led over the last 18 months, 2 years, is a system called Site Reliability Dashboard, where we're feeding in availability, number of incidents, you know, time to detect, time to resolve of incidents into a system that sort of get rolled up by different SRE organizations. And so those SRE directors are reviewing that data every week to sort of find trends earlier rather than, you know, after a quarter of incidents or whatever, a quarter of bad availability, poor reliability, they're finding that data. So they're able to find it much faster in a very nicely summarized view. Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, a good example of this is the capacity engineering team that I'm on now. That was born out of the capacity war room that Michael mentioned at the beginning, and it was a situation where the entire site was having capacity concerns due to new traffic coming in, new initiatives, all kinds of different things. And after spending the time in the war room, which is a lot of what the Code Yellow ends up being anyways, we created a new SRE team that is specifically focused on measuring capacity, planning capacity, and helping teams to understand how the entire site fits together. So we actually created new functions to support that out of that initiative. Yes.
Hi. I've been working on a lot of reduction for my organization for about a year, and I am that project manager that you mentioned that worked with 10 different teams to get it implemented. So my first question is, what is your criteria for entering and exiting Code Yellow? And the next question is, how did you get it supported by the organization? Thank you.
Sure. So the entrance and exit can vary from team to team. It's a situation where you need to have a clearly defined problem and a clearly defined path to success. So you've identified this amount of high toil and you've quantified it with the metrics, and then you've identified specific things that you can fix. Once you have that information, you generally have a conversation with your management chain up through the VP of SRE at this point, at least, and get everyone to agree that this is a good idea and that this will definitely solve a problem and make people's lives better. You'll also often involve your development team, because development and SRE at LinkedIn are separate reporting structures. So especially like in my case with Kafka SRE, there's a development team that's involved as well. So the discussions go across the board. In my case, it took us, I think, a month and a half to 2 months to get agreement on the problems and the exit criteria before we could get into that state. Do you have anything?
One piece I picked up on in the question was alert fatigue. I think that's a very, very, very common entrance problem for a Code Yellow. And as Todd said, a lot of the alerts people have are just garbage that never sort of get maintained. Like when I was in traffic, we were getting 300 alerts a day. Some of them were genuine, some of them were not. And, you know, by the 2 weeks into the Code Yellow, we reduced that to one alert a day. And, like, people could actually sleep through the night again. Like, we didn't have a Bangalore team. So, yeah, that's the one piece I wanted to add there.
So, We often have problems with management. Management is promising that there will be these things delivered by X amount of time without talking to us about what really goes into the back end of designing a manageable solution. And so do you have any suggestions for how to get management on board with allowing you the time to properly plan something so that once you start kicking off these deployments or whatever it is, that you're not, you know, working harder and having more toil than necessary? You know, if you spend time automating certain things, then there's less manual labor involved in it, but it might take some more lead time to get that set up while management's stressing about, why haven't we seen any of this stuff come out yet, you know? How do you deal with managers in those situations?
So I think this is sort of a cut before the horse problem. The way I look at it is, like, Code Yellow is basically a breaking point of a team where the current processes are not sustainable anymore. So, like, as Todd said, you know, they could see that coming. You know, in some of the cases I was involved in, we didn't necessarily see those things coming at the time. So if you're, you know, constantly measuring your toil, constantly measuring your availability, you're probably going to see a trend in that data that says, hey, we really need to do something, or this is going to get, you know, really out of control. Like if, with Todd's capacity planning, if they hadn't, you know, put some measures in that the security team aided them in doing, you know, their problem would be, you know, exponentially worse at this point. So it's sort of long-term gain for short-term pain is probably the best way to look at it.
Yeah, I would say you're describing a cultural issue in your organization where your ops or SRE or whatever organization is running things doesn't have the trust or the ear of management at the level that the product managers do. So product comes first and features come first and operations becomes a, you know, just make it work, just get it done. That's one of those cultural issues that needs to be addressed first. It's one that fortunately, you know, we got over at LinkedIn many, many, many years ago when David Henke actually went to Jeff Weiner and said, this is all broken. Those are not the words he used. If you have any idea who David Henke is, you know what words were involved here. You know, this is all busted. We need to stop everything and fix this problem first. We have no monitoring. We need this. And the reason it worked is because Jeff said, okay, let's do that. So I'm happy to talk about cultural issues a little more with you later if you'd like. And I'm sure Michael would as well.
Hello, Todd and Michael. Zimin from LinkedIn security team. I happen to be here spy on you guys. So I'm really glad that you mentioned the partnership that, you know, your team and with our team together to solve those bigger issues. So one quick remark I want to really make here is that I really like the communication you guys to the whole organization. LinkedIn becomes so large, it's always hard to do those things. And particularly, I enjoy your newsletters and those weekly updates on the Code Yellow stuff. You have a really good breakdown diagram. As you mentioned, you define those things so clearly, and you keep everything on track. So we know, okay, this part is going well, that part isn't going well. Maybe we should put more emphasis on those things. So I'm glad that this is communicated really well, and I'm glad to be part of the partnership team with you guys. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, communication really is key. We all get tons and tons of email. But half the time, if you want to know what's going on it's because you didn't read an email that went out to everyone last week. And maybe you got swamped by alerts when that happened, but the information's always there. So that really is a key to this. So
thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.